as I was experiencing him in the scene, my brain was firing off of like, oh, he's like you. He talks like you. You guys can meet each other. And so when they say cut, I was like, oh, we got it. He was like, uh-huh. That's an amazing gift to have where, you know, that's already just built in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Awardist, where we are chatting with the actors, creators, and more who are contenders this year and breaking down the state of the 2024 Oscars race. I'm Entertainment Weekly executive editor Jared Hall. In addition to all of the very TV and movie-centric award shows at the top of every year, we also have the Grammys smack dab in the middle of the action. So today's episode is a hybrid of Oscars and Grammys coverage. Be sure to stick around for my interview with The Holdovers star Daveine Joy Randolph later in the show. She is nominated for her performance in that film, her incredible performance. We'll get into all that a bit later. But first, joining me to talk Grammys is EW music editor Jason Lanfier. Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Hello. Thank you for having me, Jared.
Of course. So glad you are here. I feel like it's been a long time since we have talked music on this podcast. We talk about it all the time on Slack, but
it's true. Yeah. It's very nice to be back and better than ever for a kind of exciting Grammys this year.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, certainly some great performers. I mean, this lineup that we're about to talk about, some of the nominees and our predictions in these categories, it should make for a good show. And I'm excited for it. I will say, I feel like these Grammys have snuck up on us a bit. We knew they were coming, and suddenly, well, January has felt like the longest month ever, but it is now February, and with that now means the Grammys are upon us. So before we get into those predictions I mentioned, let's start with a little reflection time. What is your take on the past year in music? That year since Harry's House and Harry Styles kind of swept last year's awards.
You know, what struck me as the most exciting development is all the female pop musicians who have really stormed the past year. And when we were sitting down to determine what our favorite songs and albums of the year were at the end of 2023 here at EW, I felt like I was really kind of scraping to get more guys in the mix. Yeah. And I was like, you know, and I try to listen to like as much as I can, you know, mainstream, non-mainstream, all genres, and you know, really get a sense of what's really, you know, trending, but also what's on the rise. And I just think women really, really dominated the headlines, the charts,
The
tours.
The tours.
And so when it was time for us to choose what we felt was the best music of the past year, we had a top 10 of almost entirely women for albums. It was very close to that, I believe, in songs as well. And I think the Grammys reflect that. Mm-hmm. It's really Jon Batiste and a whole lot of ladies. But it feels, it feels topical. It feels spot on. And I think all of these, you know, all of these women, the pop artist, and the R&B artist in the mix, have had amazing years. And so I'm glad they're getting recognition.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. And so on that note, we can go ahead and dive into some of these categories. We're just doing a handful. There are 94 categories at the Grammys. Just a fraction of those will be handed out on the broadcast. But they start announcing those winners at like noon on Sunday. And it goes, you know, all the way until 11 o'clock at night, or I guess it's 8 o'clock our time here. But still 8 hours to announce the winners of all those awards. But for Best New Artist last year, Samara Joy, really, really talented jazz musician and singer, won Best New Artist, which was perhaps a bit of a surprise. I don't know. It's so interesting, that category, kind of looking back on it, with it also included Anita and Omar Apollo, Lato, Toby and Wigwe. Anyway, Wet Leg. This year, the nominees are Gracie Abrams, Fred Again, Ice Spice, Jelly Roll, Coco Jones, Noah Kahan, Victoria Monet, and The War and Treaty. And that group really knew encompassing several genres, which I feel like this category always does a great job of doing, you know, kind of spreading the love there. Do you have a top pick for this one?
Of who I think will win or who I want to win?
Oh, give us both.
I mean, it's, I agree with you. I think it's a really insane mix, as it should be, because what is genre in 2024 and what was genre in 2023? I mean, I think that was another trend that we've seen for a little, that's been kind of bubbling up for a while, but I feel like it's never been more apparent than now, like that genre is just sort of dissolving and artists are exploring with multiple genres. And which is exciting. I think this is a really good batch. You've got commercial success, and then you have some well-respected artists who maybe haven't had as much commercial success, but nonetheless had big years. Freddie Ginn's a great example, you know, not a chart making guy, but like, you know, he had, you know, he's worked with a lot of great artists, and you know, he collabed with Skrillex and Fortet last year and had a big moment, and when, you know, they had a big moment when they stepped in and saved Coachella after the Frank Ocean debacle. On the flip side, you've got someone like Noah Kahan, who is just very has had an amazing year. I believe he's in the top five right now for albums. You know, has kind of come out of nowhere and is sort of a fresh voice in the pop realm. I think from this list, the two to watch out for,
I'm twiddling my fingers. People can't see, but
are Ice Spice.
Yep.
And Victoria Monet.
Yep. Same two I was going to say.
Yeah. I think they've just had some really, really just big journeys this year. And I think, you know, again, Ice Spice, genius marketing move to pair her with Taylor Swift.
Yep.
Kind of an odd pairing, to be quite honest. I don't, I'm not really,
unexpected.
I'm still not sure.
I would not have thought of it. Yeah.
I'm still a little surprised that, you know, that the rap verse snuck into that song, but you know, that was a first some people had heard of Ice Spice. And I think lady rappers, I don't know. I think the men have some catching up to do as far as successful lady rappers right now. Of course, Ice Spice also teamed with Pink Pantheress on their song, The Boys a Lear. I think that song felt ubiquitous to me, not only on TikTok, but just, you know, blaring out of cars. And I think it's a great song. We chose it as one of our favorite songs of last year. And Ice Spice has a really great, you know, verse. She, you know, has the whole second verse, and it's fresh. It's what's crazy to me is how much she and Pink Pantheress could accomplish in such a short amount of time. In like 2 minutes, essentially, they, you know, have created this really refreshing sort of almost like drum and bass inflected pop song that, you know, sails into the top five. And, you know, like I said, it felt kind of inescapable. Other side of the coin, you've got, I mean, my personal favorite of anybody on this list is Victoria Monet. And she has been writing for other artists for a while.
Yep. I think that could serve her well here.
Exactly. It just feels like a great time to honor her as her own artist.
Yep.
I think would be really exciting. And I think we sort of, many of us, you know, were in agreement over this, though. The record, the album, you know, that she put out last year is just so tight and inspired. Yeah. And it sounds like a nice blend of old school R&B, meets contemporary pop.
Yeah.
Hip hop, and that's right. Such Jaguar right. 2 I'm talking yeah. about.
We're kind of like trying to push things forward in the genre and do something fresh. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that Victoria Monet is a prime example of an artist who, you know, is sort of dismantling genre, mm-hmm. yeah. Which we yeah. touched at the top of the show.
Yeah.
She really, I think, exhibits versatility on Jaguar 2. We chose it as one of our top 10, you know, favorite albums of last year. On My Mama, which is the highlight from that album, mm-hmm. we chose as our favorite song of last
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
So we are clearly very much behind Victoria Monet.
Yeah.
And I'm personally gunning for her. Who are you rooting for, Jared?
Yeah, I think Victoria's, I feel like maybe the one to beat here, but you made compelling arguments for several folks in this category. The only other one I would add, there is a lot of love for Jelly Roll. He has a great story. His music, you know, a lot of people are connecting with. And so, you know, he's got that going for him as well. I will say there's been a lot of a label push behind Gracie Abrams.
Yes.
So I don't know if it's enough to push her to the win here, but she's already like her she'll have a second album already this year. So she is really she is at work. She is doing her thing and, you know, really trying to stay consistent, which I think is really important, you know, for any artist who's getting started. But yeah, I think yeah. I'm with you on this. Victoria Monet, I'm going to give that one too. Let's move on to pop vocal album. Last year, this went to Harry Styles for Harry's House. The nominees this year are Kelly Clarkson for Chemistry, Miley Cyrus's Endless Summer Vacation, Olivia Rodrigo for Guts, Ed Sheeran's Subtraction, which is the final in his, you know, mathematical sign franchise, if we want to call it that, and then Taylor Swift for Midnights. What I'll say here is that inherent to the name of the category, pop vocal mm-hmm. album, to me this is really about the singer and what they do with their songs, with their vocals. To me, that means it should come down to Kelly Clarkson and Miley Cyrus, and I would be overjoyed if either of them won. But do we really think that's going to happen, Jason?
I don't know. I mean, I know you're a big Kelly fan. And you know, had a nice interview with her last year, Jared. And you know, definitely enjoyed that record. I think that it didn't really put that much of a dent in the public consciousness, right?
Like, it sure didn't.
I think we were a little surprised by that, given just her general popularity. She's kind of, you know, she's not America's sweetheart, but she's certainly one of America's sweethearts. Yeah. We hadn't heard from her in a bit, it felt like, and she's an incredible vocalist. Mm-hmm. I think her show has been a blessing and a curse. A blessing because it's just really entertaining. She's had amazing artist on
and
it.
And she does her Kelly-oke every day, and we get to hear her sing every day.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think in a sense, though, that eclipses, you know, her career as a musician, which that's not to say she isn't an incredibly talented vocalist and, you know, is responsible for one of the most important pop songs of the, you know, century Since You've Been Gone. But I think that people are now really thinking of her as a personality and a talk show host and a judge more than they are thinking of her as, you know, a singer-songwriter. Yeah. Wow. And I think looking at this list, she just doesn't feel, as fresh as some of the other talent on this list, and so I think it would be fair to give it to her, but I'm just not sure she's top of mind for many of the voters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're going to talk top of mind, I mean, of course, that's Taylor Swift. It's interesting because in years past, there have been times that you think like, oh, Taylor Swift, that popularity is just going to drive the votes and people are just going to check her name. And there are, of course, categories that she has lost, you know, for instance, for Song of the Year, which goes to the songwriters. That's one that has kind of eluded her. So, so, you know, she's not winning every award, but for pop vocals, I don't know. I could see her winning this, but Miley Cyrus has fewer nominations, and so I think if this is one where they want to share the love, and kind of give everyone their due, maybe this is where Taylor doesn't win.
Yeah, maybe this is where they do honor Kelly. But I also wouldn't, or Miley.
Or Miley. Miley's the one I'm thinking who could pull ahead here.
I mean, Miley had a song that just was, ubiquitous this past year.
Yeah, Flowers
year.
Is, yeah.
You know, it's not my favorite pop song, but
yeah.
I think a lot of people did really appreciate it because it was about self-love versus, the heartache of losing someone.
Yeah,
I think
and it wasn't you complete me kind of song. It was
exactly.
I complete me. Yeah.
Exactly. Which was, obviously you've seen empowerment pop really take off in the past, few years. And self-love is big. So I think that was a big part of this. It's a catchy song, but also there's a message that people really respond to now. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't rule out Olivia Rodrigo. Mm-hmm. I think that she obviously is a great singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
She is known for her vocals. I think that, she's not belting her guts out to ballads, but I think Vampire is probably the closest she comes to that. And I think people really, again, responded to that song. She proved that, that she can overcome a sophomore slump.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, with her second record that came out last year, Guts, she topped her first record.
Yeah.
The songwriting is really, she's really evolved as a singer songwriter in such a short amount of time. But, again, we're talking vocals here.
Yeah.
And I think, we just based on how inescapable she was last year, it may be Taylor Swift's, to beat.
Yeah. And by the way, not to say, I think Taylor Swift has a great voice. I just don't think she's in the league of, and I cautiously say that I think she might say the same. She's not in the, she doesn't have the voice of Kelly or Miley, but that doesn't mean she's not a good singer. She is. And she knows how to write to her voice. And I think
exactly.
That is really important. Yeah.
Yeah.
We mentioned, a lot of those folks are songwriters. So let's talk about Song of the Year, where the award does go to the writer of the song. Last year, there was a shocker in this category when Bonnie Raitt was announced the winner for Just Like That. The nominees this year, I'm going to give you the song title and the artist. In many cases, the artist is also a writer here. So A&W, that's by Lana Del Rey, Antihero, performed by Taylor Swift, Butterfly, John Batiste, Dance the Night, that's from the Barbie album, Dua Lipa performed that, Flowers from Miley Cyrus, Kill Bill from SZA, Vampire, that's Olivia Rodrigo's, and Billie Eilish's Barbie song, What Was I Made For? And I'm just going to say that last one right there is the winner.
Yeah, I think What Was I Made For stands a very good chance at walking away with this award. Of course, it's about the song writing, and it's a really beautiful pop song, and it really stood out from the Barbie soundtrack, which ended up, I think, disappointing many of us. It felt a little, with all the stars attached to it, I think we expected a little bit more, and it was sort of just. Mid. Yeah. But that song really, really stands out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, of course, gotten an Oscar nom. I think it's probably the song to beat for the Oscars as well.
Yeah.
For Best Original Song. But I think, I think Billie Eilish and Phineas could also, walk away with the Grammy this year. Mm-hmm. We know that the Grammys loves Billie Eilish.
they sure
she's
do.
She's one of the very few artists who has won all four of the major categories.
Yep.
The big categories, the big four. That's just a very rare feat.
And especially, but, you know, so young.
It's yeah. So was young.
She's 22, I think.
Yeah. And she had accomplished that feat, you know, so we're talking best song of the year, record of the year, album of the year, best new artist, winning all of those awards by the time she was 20, which is just, you know, kind of astonishing.
But, yeah.
So I think, you know, what might hurt her chances is that she has won all those awards and they've already drowned her in so many accolades that they may want to give somebody else an opportunity here, you know, to walk away with it. Also, since she is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jared, but since she is the front runner for best original song for the Oscars with this song, What Was I Made For? They may think, well, she's going to get the Oscar.
She'll get that. Oh, I see what you mean.
Why don't we spread the love?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, at the Oscars, sometimes our rationale for someone not winning is, well, they do already have one. So, you know, and it was a fairly recent win. So the Academy might give it to someone else in this category. Of course, at the Oscars, you typically only have, you know, one shot to win. Whereas at the Grammys, you can get multiple nominations in a year. So that, of course, betters her chances for winning more, which she has done. But that's an interesting theory that they could look at that and think, you know what, she's good. She's going to do all right over there. Let's give it to Miley for Flowers or Jack Antonoff and Taylor for Anti-Hero. Not saying that those are necessarily, well, I don't know. Maybe I do think one of those will win. But knowing how last year, like I said, there was a shocker in this category.
Shocker.
If memory doesn't usually serve me well, but I do feel like that this particular category is one where the Recording Academy, they really do. They love their songwriters. And of course, Bonnie Raitt is one of the absolute best. But she was a solo songwriter on that as well. We don't have any solo songwriters this year. Of course, Billy and her brother Phineas, I mean, they are a writing duo. And Jack, well, Taylor writes a lot of her stuff solo, but Jack does, he does have writing credit on a lot of stuff as well. So I don't know. I'm torn on this. I do think it will likely be Billy, but I won't be surprised nor disappointed if, I mean, really, honestly, if a lot of these win, but, I wouldn't consider it like last year a shocker if they announce Flowers or Anti-Hero.
Yeah, I mean, again, we have to talk about, you know, we have to talk about popularity, and you know, no song on this list was more popular than Flowers, and you know, that was on the charts. I mean, that was on the charts from like 1973 until now.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. it dominated the first half of the year.
I mean, people were still talking about this as a potential song of the summer.
Yeah.
When it surfaced at the beginning of 2003, it was a winter song. It wasn't a summer song,
no.
But I mean, it had major summer vibes, but it really,
which is funny because
this,
the album title is Endless Summer Vacation. So, funny that it was a winter release.
I don't think we should rule out Flowers by any means. I would say it's probably going to come down to Flowers and What Was I Made For. That said, I think Anti-Hero and Vampire, I wouldn't rule them out. They've got some great lines, and they're both very, you know, I think Anti-Hero was sort of inescapable as well.
That was the first single off that album, right?
That was the first single. Yeah. And but again, I think Olivia Rodrigo has proven, you know, that she can very quickly grow as a songwriter. And that what's interesting about that song is it's sort of unexpected. I think it goes in a direction that you really don't see coming. It starts out as, you know, this sort of, you know, tender ballad, and then all of a sudden she takes it in sort of a it kind of explodes into this like sort of almost like a rock song. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that that is, I think she's, I just think she's a refreshing voice when it comes to pop music.
Yeah.
She's, you know, she's sort of, evoking like Avril Lavigne and
Alanis Morissette, even a bit.
Alanis Morissette and some of our other sort of alt pop divas from the, from the mid to late 90s, that, you know, I think a younger audience is really, really, keen on.
Yeah.
I just do sort of wonder, the Grammys always kind of feel, they tend to skew a little older, to put it nicely. So I think
hence
that's why.
That Bonnie Raitt win. Yeah.
Yeah, which nobody saw coming. No. I think that for that reason, even though, you know, A&W was named Song of the Year by many, many critics. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, a great song. I think it is, it's a long song, and I mean, talk about eliminating genre from the equation. Lana takes you through, you know, balladry, hip hop. It's a lot for one song. And whereas, you know, a lot of people find that exciting, I think that it may be a little bit too chewy. For some of the more, you know, voters who just tend to flock more toward populist fare.
Yeah. And by the way, Jack Antonoff, also a co-writer on that song. So he has two shots in this category.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk album of the year, which I think I've talked about this before. I don't understand why album of the year is not the top award. Like, it's not the last category they announced. To me, the album is the pinnacle. But anyway, last year, the winner, Harry Styles, Harry's House. That's the one where, remember, they had the super fans doing the bits throughout the show, and then they announced the winner. The nominees this year are World Music Radio from John Batiste, The Record from Boy Genius, Endless Summer Vacation, Miley Cyrus, Did You Know That There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard, Lana Del Rey, The Age of Pleasure, Janelle Monáe, Guts, Olivia Rodrigo, Midnights, Taylor Swift, and SOS, SZA. Jason, take it away on this one. Who do you want to win, and who should win?
I gotta say, this of the big four, this to me feels the most spot on. As far as more popular artists making solid records, these you know, with the exception of maybe a couple. Oh. this to me looks like it represents the good music from last year very well, I think. So I don't know, when the nomination surfaced, I had a moment of hope for the Grammys. You know, we kind of drag the Grammys every year for feeling a little less relevant than the Grammys and Emmys. And so when I saw this list, I thought, okay, like maybe they're changing their tune, or maybe I'm getting boring. I don't know. But I think almost all of these belongs on this list. And, you know, we chose four of these albums. We placed on our best albums of the year list in 2023. So, you know, we're definitely fans of these artists. This is interesting. We know that Taylor, has won Album of the Year 3 times already. If she does this, she will, you know, have the most album, most Album of the Year wins.
Yeah.
Of any artist, that is massive. Mm-hmm. Of course, people, 2023 was certainly her year of any musician. Yeah. It was her year.
Yeah.
I think, you know, whereas Midnights is not the best Taylor Swift album.
Right.
I think it's a good Taylor Swift album. Uh-huh. She's certainly done better. She's certainly one for albums that I think are superior to Midnight.
Yeah.
But it's still Taylor. And the Grammys have shown her a lot of love, you know, over the years. Also, I don't know about you, but Midnight's to me feels a little far away at this point.
It does, right? Yeah.
It was the late 2022. It came out in the fall of 2022.
Yeah, October. Yeah.
And so that to me makes it just feel like it wasn't really, you know, it feels a little odd in this mix. But, you know, technically, you know, it qualifies, which is why it's there. And she had a huge year. She performed songs from this record, you know, on the Eras tour, and which was obviously, you know, a behemoth.
Yeah. Still going.
So I think she has a really strong chance to win this award.
I think the thing is looking at this. Oh, sorry to interrupt. As you're talking, I keep looking at this list, and the more I keep thinking, I could see any of these people winning, to be honest. Because John Batiste, also the Academy, the Recording Academy loves him. Boy genius. Absolutely. That album is just chef's kiss. But also, if we want to look at, and not that, I don't think the Recording Academy does this as much as perhaps some other voting bodies. But, you know, that the overdue narrative, I don't think the Recording Academy subscribes to that train of thought as much as some other, you know, like TV and film. But you know, thinking about Janelle Monáe and Lana Del Rey, and I don't think Miley Cyrus has very many, you know, Grammys to her credit. But then SZA, I mean, I saw so many artists and musicians and singers posting about this album when it came out and how much they loved it. But you know, is that the way voting goes? Big old question mark.
Yeah, that's the thing. You've got some really, this is a really interesting mix of artists and, you know, of albums. I think, you know, you mentioned Janelle Monáe, The Age of Pleasure is a beautiful record. She's got, you know, Fela Kuti's former band backing her. Another artist who's just, a genre just is an empty word to her. She's doing jazz, she's doing soul, she's doing R&B, she's doing pop, she's doing hip hop. And that record's great. It's probably the most eventful 30 minutes of music, you know, I heard last year, maybe aside from Victoria Monet, and her record. But I think, I think SZA is, it may come down to SZA and Taylor Swift. I think, you know, SOS was, you know, number one album. And I think, she certainly racked up the accolades in 2023. SZA ended up in a lot of, you know, best of the year lists. I think if you think about it in a grander sense, it would be really surprising to see SOS win Album of the Year if Beyoncé could not win Album of the Year for Renaissance last year.
The joke. You know who's not going to lose this category is Beyonce, because she's not nominated, of course. But
yes,
more just a commentary on how if she can't win, yeah, I don't know if SZA can either, or Janelle.
It's just interesting because I think many of us, many viewers, were shocked and frankly disappointed that Harry Styles won Album of the Year last year. Over Beyonce. You know, he had Harry had Harry's House and Beyonce had Renaissance. Renaissance was, you know, a very modern sounding record that also paid homage to decades worth of music. Hip hop, disco, house, techno, everything. And it still wasn't impressive enough to win the voting body over. The thing with SZA is, with this record SOS, it is a very long listen. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that the songwriting and the actual production is a little complex for a lot of voters. I think a lot of people appreciate it. But I don't think that record goes down as smoothly as some of the other records on the list. Do you know that there's a tunnel under Ocean Boulevard? Lana Del Rey has written, you know, yet another, you know, fascinating record that she's really shown her range this time. She's always shown her range, you know, I think with her songwriting, with lyrics. But here she, you know, she really hops around genres as well. That said, these songs are complex. Some of them are, a good handful of them are over 5 minutes long. And I don't know if the voting body will respond to that. I also think, you know, Lana's remains a controversial figure. I think sometimes it's hard for people to separate the art from the artist. I certainly think you should. But I think at the end of the day, you know, sometimes these awards are really popularity contests. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have someone like, you know, Taylor Swift, you'll find almost no one with any negative remarks, you know, about her as a performer and songwriter. Yeah. So whereas Midnights is a safe choice, and whereas I don't think Midnights is as strong as, you know, several of the records on this, several of the albums on this list, I do think it feels very Grammys. You mentioned John Batiste. He was another surprise winner when he won 2 years ago for album of the year. I don't know if this album World Music Radio really made that much of a splash compared to the other people on this list.
Not the same impact.
Not the same impact. And, you know, you could argue, well, why can't he win again if we're thinking Taylor might win again? But I just think they're in different leagues. And I think to give John Batiste, as talented as he is, to give him the award for album of the year so soon after he has won it would be very surprising. Very surprising for the voters to choose up.
Don't disagree with you. Well, I think I lean toward Taylor here, but again, could see any of them winning. I'd love to see Boy Genius get some love, and this could be where that happens, though perhaps not as likely. And I keep coming back to Miley's album, but like you said, Lana's is so complex, and she does some great things with that. All right, our last category, the last one here, Record of the Year, which goes to performer and producers. Last year's winner was Lizzo for About Damn Time, and it's about damn time we get to this category. All right, the nominees are Worship from John Batiste, Not Strong Enough, Boy Genius, Flowers, Miley Cyrus, What Was I Made For from the motion picture Barbie, that one by Billie Eilish, On My Mama, Victoria Monet, Vampire, Olivia Rodrigo, Antihero, Taylor Swift, Kill Bill, SZA. Ay, 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 I don't even know. I don't know, Jason. I keep in my head now, it's I have the, you know, the popularity thing with Taylor, but I'm thinking about just, you know, like we've talked about how big Flowers was, and we know how big What Was I Made For was as well. So part of me, well, and then Vampire was big latter half of the year, right before, you know, voting, or before the eligibility window closed, it was hitting. I don't know. I don't know where I land on this one. I think what I think should win is Flowers or What Was I Made For, but I don't know that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, it's really interesting, this one, because they do surprise you sometimes. I think Lizzo winning last year was a surprise.
Yeah.
I absolutely don't think that was the most, you know, inspired track of the contenders last year. But you know, one trend I think you have to keep in mind with the Grammys is they tend to love retro. And I think that was part of the allure of About Damn Time. And I think that is why Silk Sonic also won Record of the Year for Leave the Door Open. which is a very retro sounding, you know, soul song. I mean, it sounds like a classic soul song.
It's a great point.
And it would have come out, you know, in the 70s.
And keep in mind, Lizzo beat people, including Adele, Beyonce, Harry Styles, yes. Brandi Carlile. So yeah, that's a great point you make.
And I would argue all of those songs, I think, were more interesting than About Damn Time, as catchy as it is. So I think given the Grammys, you know, just predilection for retro, I don't think we should rule out even On My Mama. I think it's probably a long shot. That wasn't a huge radio hit. It wasn't a chart topper. But it's got a very, you know, sort of, it's a nice blend of sort of retro soul and hip hop. So it may be the dark horse here. That said, Flowers too has a retro sound to it. Flowers is really, it's a modern day disco track. And it goes down really easily. It's really catchy. As we've touched on a few times already, that song was really inescapable for most of the year. And so I think it could be the one to beat here, but I agree with you, Jared. I think What Was I Made For, is another song that the Grammy voters, I think, could get behind. They voted for Billie Eilish and Finneas before. If you recall, they took it home 2 years in a row. Bad Guy and Everything I Wanted. As much of a downer, certainly not a feel good song.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What Was I Made For? But as much of a downer, as it is, I think it's a beautiful song, by the way. I'm not knocking it, but, it stands out from this pack as being, you know, as being like the really,
it's one of these things is not like the other. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's really the only ballad. And so I think it has a really strong chance as well. You know, Bruno Mars had a three-peat for this very category. If you count the Silk Sonic win, from 2022. So, you know, who's to say that the Billie can't win for this? I think what she also has working in her favor is the ubiquity of Barbie. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, you know, the movie story. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong because you're a movies guy. The movie story of the year was just was the success of Barbie, by, you know, Greta Gerwig, a female director, and, you know, it's about being a woman in modern times and how that's evolved and how it's, you know, it hasn't evolved.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that, this song from Billie Eilish, it's certainly the highlight of the soundtrack, but it also sort of represents all that.
Yeah.
And I think heading into the Oscars, Barbie is still very top of mind.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the recent snubs and all of that. Yeah.
Especially the recent snubs. You had Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig, get snubbed for, quote unquote snub. Right. Some people wouldn't consider it a snub.
Yeah.
For Oscars here. Yeah. And so, you know, Billie could very well walk away with this win. And I think it's about more than just this song, even though we should really only be talking about, you know, the production of the song.
Right.
I do want to give a special call out though to Boy Genius.
Glad you said that.
And, you know, we haven't really talked much about, this super group, you know, much this episode, but I think we really, you know, should highlight them. Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus, and Julian Baker. They're all really, talented, singer songwriters in their own right. They've had great solo projects. You put them all in a studio together and they created a really, really, really beautiful record, that was, a staff favorite, but also a favorite of so it ended up on mm-hmm. so many year end lists. Yeah. There was a consensus around totally. Around that. And I think not strong enough. I think that we chose that as, I want to say, like, I think it was just a second song, our second favorite song of last year. And it's the only rock song on this list, which I think is pretty impressive because as we've seen, as the charts indicate, rock is not really, you know, top of mind for people. Yeah. Pop, hip hop still dominate the charts. And so for a rock, for an indie rock song to even be on the, you know, song of the year list, I think is really, really a feat in itself. Mm-hmm. I would love to see Boy Genius walk away with this, but I would love to see them walk away with anything because very rarely do you see this sort of talent, you know, come together. And, you know, it would be really nice to see three young, beloved queer women resonate with an institution like the Grammys.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because as we were talking about, like, you know, all these other names in this category, I just kept staring at their name thinking, my God, I hope they are not shut out on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because they deserve
maybe
something.
Surprise.
That's true. That's true. They could end up being a sweep.
The John Batiste. Maybe they'll be the John Batiste this year.
Yeah. And it'll be so well deserved. So all of that to say, it's so hard to predict the winners of some of these categories because on one hand, you can just go straight for popularity and we could do a ballot, and make our predictions based on, oh, this will win, this will win, this will win. But on the other hand, the Academy, Recording Academy voters are fickle isn't exactly the right word, but you just never know from year to year how they're going to vote. Unlike some of the other voting academies you can kind of predict the way they think, but I don't think that is the case with these Recording Academy voters.
No, I think they, I would dare say, and again, you're the awards guru here, Jared, but I would dare say they tend to surprise more than the Emmys or Oscars.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you touched on, how unpredictable they are. The pendulum swings every year. You've got very, very modern. I mean, she was, between 18 and 20 years old. You have someone like Billie Eilish popping up out of nowhere and winning all these awards so early in her career. And being, one of a handful of artists to win the big four, to win in the big four categories, but then, a year later you have a Jean Baptiste. Who that record was certainly not as top of mind and as popular as the others on that list in 2 years ago and yet he had a very big night and so who knows? I mean, who knows? I'm sure there will be a lot of surprises in store. I know that. I know that for a fact. I mean, you've got so many people who are up for several awards. SZA is up for 9. Victoria Monet's up for 7. I'm hoping that we are surprised, but I'm also hoping that they distribute these awards out evenly. And I don't necessarily think anybody this year should sweep.
I agree with that completely. Yeah, I hope they're distributed. I hope and think we're going to get some great performances. I think we'll have some surprises. I do know Trevor Noah is hosting, and he does a fine and lovely job, and everybody there loves him. I'm sure we're going to get some fantastic tributes, which I think these Grammy ceremonies do so well. So I'm looking forward to all of that. It's going to be a fun, busy night. That all goes down Sunday starting at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, live on CBS.
Can we do a special shout out? I think it's pretty awesome. More than any other award, more than any award, period, and any other performance, I am most excited to finally finally, decades in the making here. See Joni Mitchell.
Yes.
Joni Mitchell make her Grammys performance debut.
It's wild.
We have never seen Joni Mitchell perform in the Grammys, which is just, I mean, what I didn't even realize when the news broke last week that she was going to be performing, I was just incredulous. I'm thinking, no, that can't be right. That can't be right.
Yeah.
But it is in fact true. She almost never performs. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is a treat in itself.
Yeah.
Very, very, very excited to see Joni Mitchell perform at the Grammys.
Yeah. And I have a suspicion Brandi Carlile had a big hand in that, since they have been working together a bit and performing at very small festivals and stuff. So thank you in advance to Brandi Carlile for that. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we turn our focus back to movies and my interview with the Holdovers, Oscar nominee Davine Joy Randolph, the awardist. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Awardist. All right, folks, this performer, this artist, this just really incredibly talented actress, who's also a singer, by the way, fitting that she's part of this episode, Davine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers plays Mary Lamb. She is a grieving mother who is the she runs the cafeteria at this academy where Paul Giamatti plays a professor. And it is the holiday break, so they are left to take care of and feed the students who can't go home for the holidays. They are the ones who are the holdovers. And it's a really beautiful story. Davine is just so kind of quietly devastating in her grief, and you see her go through so much of that, which we talk about in our interview. So how about we get to that right now? Davine Joy Randolph from The Holdovers.
Well, I want to start by really recognizing the great variety of roles that you have been playing in recent years. Only Murders in the Building, The Idol, Dolomite is My Name, The Lost City, The Last OG. There's been a handful of animated roles as well. But this one is so wonderfully different from all of those. Had you been looking for something like this? I'd love to hear about the way and the timing of it coming into your life.
I'm always looking for it. Whatever it is, I don't even know if I'm aware what it is. I like to keep a very diversified portfolio. That's probably the most important to me. I've been like that for forever. And I realize of the actors and actresses that I really admire, that's a common thread that they have. They have the ability to transform and be, you know, many different things. And I'm grateful to have the skill set in order to do that. When this came across, for me, the biggest thing that stood out to me was that this Black woman was able to have a fully realized character, story, and multi-dimensions, and that the director and the writer had already put in place room for me to create and allow her to blossom. And a lot of times that's not the case, and you're trying to work out ways to fit that in to a script that's naturally not there. So before, I mean, yes, when Alexander, we had our meeting first, but when I got the script, it was a script that really made me be like, oh, wow, I actually have quite a bit that I can work with and work off of. And then adding Paul into the equation, chef's kiss.
Well, we all know there are various stages of grief, and we behave and we react differently through each of those as we experience them. So when we meet Mary, I think it's perhaps kind of fair to say that she's in the depression stage. Would you say that?
Yeah. So my goal actually was, because as the movie starts, he's only been gone for maybe 2 to 3 months. It's quite fresh for her. So what I wanted to do is that I wanted to challenge myself that through the course of the entire movie, I go through all the different stages. That was something that I wanted to create and push for. And it was a challenge. It was definitely a challenge. But it was a rewarding one for sure.
Yeah. What did you just innately understand about the position that she was in?
That she is a woman who is a relentlessly hard worker, that has to work harder than most people in order to make an honest living, that she worked her butt off so that her child could have a good education, which makes it so sad that even in how hard she worked, it still was not enough financially for her to be able to afford him to go to college. I think she's a strategist. She intentionally worked at that job so that her son could get an education there, a discounted education there. It's just heartbreaking that she didn't have enough money to put him through college, and that because of that, he had to go to war. And I understand that being the color of our skin, what that meant for a black man to go into that kind of situation, and that more likely than not, he was on the front lines. And that's just tragic and heartbreaking, I think, for her, because she feels in many ways that she failed him. And I know what it's like to, like, you know, work quietly, I don't want to say in the shadows, but like on the sidelines in a bit. That's why I think this moment is so special to me, because I've been doing the work for no other reason other than I believe it's not only a God-given gift, but it is something that I'm supposed to be, is in alignment with my purpose. And so no matter whether prior anyone said anything about, you know, the work that I create, what I'm so grateful for now in this moment is that people are responding to it. But to be honest, I feel good about the project and I feel good about what I contributed, so that even if they never did, it wouldn't stop me from going, because I know this is part of what I'm supposed to be doing, whether it's to help people release or heal or laugh or, you know what I mean, just get a break from their own reality, or to get in touch with their reality and to now face things and ask certain questions. You know what I mean? That's a part of what I feel like why I do and why I choose the roles that I choose. It's for a reason. Even if it's a comedy, it's for a very specific reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of what you just said there is about the, of course, there's the grief, but all of that extra guilt that she feels over her son's loss. And we eventually see Mary have a bit of a breakdown at the Christmas party. But it's a really pivotal scene for so many reasons, also because of what Angus shares with Mary and Paul. But that scene is so pivotal. So did all of you perhaps spend a little more time on this specific moment to make sure you got all of the emotional beats just right?
No, the opposite. The actual kitchen scene was two takes, maybe three takes, two takes. Matter of fact, after I did the first take, they were like, I think the DP walked out and was like, I need a second. Cause I let it out. It was very quiet when I finished, and everyone was just so supportive and respectful. You know, the actors knew, definitely Paul knew what that meant for me to go there, and everyone was very respectful of that. And I remember Alex was like, okay, so we have that one in the can. And he was like, let's try one more. Maybe there was a third one. I don't think so. But not, and that wasn't even intentional. It just was, this is my offering of my interpretation of what is on the page. And it seemed to resonate with everyone. So I was grateful for that, that even amongst our team of creatives, they were like, okay. If I had to do multiple takes, I would have done that too. It's just, I think it's just how it ended up.
What's interesting is because a lot of actors will say, we did 10 takes, but it's the first take that's in the movie. And I think there's really something to be said for that. It's fresh. It's the first go. And there's something more honest, I guess, about that, because all the others that follow, then you, like, you're in your head and you're thinking about it more. Oh, potentially overthinking.
Exactly. It's an extension of, or a slightly dulled down version of, the first thing you did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Paul and Dominic together, I mean, there's a bit of a kind of a Three Musketeers dynamic going on at times. The chemistry between the three of you, of course, on one side, you've got the veteran, fantastic Paul Giamatti, and then Dominic Sessa in his feature film debut. And my gosh, does he knock it out of the park with a pretty big and daunting role here. But I'm wondering, did the three of you get to spend much time together in advance, or were the characters kind of experiencing each other in the same time that the three of you as actors were experiencing each other?
I mean, we came about 3 weeks to a month earlier before actually shooting. And two or three of those weeks were spent with like text analysis and fittings and all of that stuff. Winter in Boston, but we predominantly filmed more so maybe like an hour more north of Boston. So it was quiet and desolate. And so it was just three of us. Like, that was it. Yeah, in a way, that was kind of our timeline with maybe the addition of two or three more weeks.
Got it. By the way, I think that really speaks all the more to how this is really great casting here. It's just this perfect meeting of personalities, the three of you.
Absolutely. And also, you know, Paul and I went to the same school for graduate school, Yale School of Drama. So what was great, though we didn't go at the same time, I think it's a testament to the institution. We spoke the same language. So I think I don't remember. It was 2 years ago, but I believe I just remember in our first initial scene, it was like a double take where it was like, I don't know how to explain it other than like, if you go to a foreign country and you don't speak the language and then you hear somebody that speaks English and your ear like catches it. It was like being in the scene. And as I was experiencing him in the scene, my brain was firing off of like, oh, he's like you. He talks like you. You guys can meet each other. And so when they say cut, I was like, oh, we got it. He was like, uh-huh. That's an amazing gift to have where, you know, that's already just built in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, people have often described Alexander Payne as an actor's director. So what excited you most about getting to work with him?
I think the reason why people say that is because he creates an environment to your betterment, where a lot of times maybe only the lead might get that in certain situations, or the actors have to fight for that. The entire environment, there's no video village, there's no monitors, there's no, you know what I mean, you're not like looking at, you know, your performance. The camera's there and he's right next to the camera in the room with you. So it's a very intimate thing. And you feel as though you're all doing it together. That it's not like, you know, this grandiose ego driven thing of I'm the director and you're the actors. It was very much so a joint effort in us creating something.
Love that. We, of course, got to spend a good amount of time with Mary. But I got to say, I really wanted more of her, so I'm wondering if by chance, did you shoot more scenes? Were there things that for whatever reason might have hit the cutting room floor?
No, I would say more like longer forms of the scenes. Does that make sense? Like there was no additional scenes. Like that kitchen scene is longer, but I think at a certain point it's like, it's too much. We all need to go to therapy now, but you know what I mean? But like there were definitely like longer forms or versions of scenes. No additional scenes to my knowledge, at least not with the script that I read.
Well, you've touched a bit on how much the reaction and the reception to your performance here has meant to you, but I kind of want to elaborate on that a bit. How is all of this Oscar buzz making you feel?
Oh, it's weird. It's very weird to me. I don't really know, to be honest. I feel like a little bit like an awkward teenager. I don't really know how to handle it, to be quite honest, beyond not handling it. If I'm being completely transparent with you, I've told my team, don't you tell me. Like, I don't want to know the day they vote. I don't want to know the day that we find out. I just want to wake up in the morning and whatever happens, happens. I can't. This industry is such a beautiful one, but it's also a huge mix of luck and chance and timing and opportunity. And so there's been times where I've done projects where I'm like, oh, for sure, this is it. This is a hit and nothing, or vice versa. And people loving it. It's so hard and unreliable to base, you know what I mean, success on. So I don't do it for that. I do it for telling the stories of these women who probably wouldn't get an opportunity to have their stories heard otherwise. And I try to do it at a high level of quality because that's important to me, especially as a minority and as a female. And I do it also that if it any way can help people, whether it's comedy or drama, that it's like, you know, if it can make somebody laugh or be healing in some type of way, that's the thing I'm invested in. But for there to be conversation about it, it's amazing. It's amazing. I think if nothing else, it's a little nudge or like a little faint whisper to myself of like, okay, we're on to something. Keep going and don't give up, because it's hard. This industry is very hard. And so I think if anything, it instates my desire and will to keep chugging along.
Yeah, well, you are just a shining star in this, and all the best to you. I am hopeful we will continue to see you down the road. But I understand why you're telling your team, keep it out of my ears for now. But nonetheless, congratulations.
Well, I hope to see you too. I just don't want to know in advance and be nervous. But I appreciate it, and I hope to see you soon.
All right. Well, congratulations, and thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Well, by the way, I do want to mention that interview. I spoke with her. It was late last year. And so she had not actually won a lot of these awards yet, but she had been nominated. She was picking up a lot of honors already. So so I understand even earlier in the process, Jason, how she, you know, why she didn't want to, you know, from her team, all of the, you know, the Oscars talk, because you don't want to get hyped up for something that doesn't happen, because that is inevitable every year. But Davine has just been, she's a force to be reckoned with this season. And I think all the attention she's getting for this is just, it's so well deserved. She is fantastic in this. And I think she really gives, kind of a masterclass on how to still stand out in a film without like an over the top performance, that you can play a very you can give a very lived in performance. You can understand everything a person's going through without them having to say and do a lot. Yet she is doing a lot to still give you all of that. You know what I mean? It's such a tricky balance. But she is a classically trained actress, and I think that training really shows here. She's incredible, and I know you have seen the film as well. Yes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her, and I do think that that she was the highlight.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah, she's great. She's fantastic.
Quietly devastating is exactly that's what you said, and I think that's exactly right. I mean, you can just watch her sit in a room smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
And that alone just sort of gives you a really, you know, she just has such a strong presence,
mm-hmm.
and you can feel her grief.
Yeah.
You know, she's lost her son. He was killed
in battle.
And, I think that, she also manages to be, you know, really funny sometimes.
Funny,
she's
yes.
got a really tough exterior.
Yeah.
And so I to show that sort of range, but then to also show restraint,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, you said it's a low
key
performance.
Yeah.
Is a difficult task, I think, to achieve. Mm-hmm. And she did it.
So well. By the way, if you've not seen the film, anyone listening, The Holdovers is streaming on Peacock, and it is available to rent or buy on digital platforms. And with that, we will wrap it up here. That is it for this week's episode of The Awardist. Jason, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And thanks so much to all of you for listening. If you like what you're hearing here on The Awardist, you can follow, rate the podcast, and we hope leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation with us going, you can follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials. We're at EW on X, formerly known as Twitter, and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag me at Jared Hall. We'll see you back here next week and every day at EW.com.
This episode of The Awardist is hosted and produced by Jared Hall and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.